I want to talk. I've been thinking about you and me. About how this is going to end. About who will end up killing who. Perhaps you'll kill me. Perhaps I'll kill you. You know that, don't you?
Tell me what I'm doing here!
You're going mad.
Where is he?
Why aren't you laughing?
All it takes is one bad day.
Hello, hello everybody. Welcome to a bonus episode of Super Podcast for this week, right here on the Super Network at supermarcy.com. I'm your host, Super Marcy, or as I'm otherwise known as Harley Quinn, because I'm just a little mad. And with me for this special bonus episode is my partner in crime, the one they call Bee. Bee the Trixie Girl, the Poison Ivy to my Harley Quinn. Hello, Bee.
And I'm more than just a little bit sexy. How are you, my dear?
You are very sexy. I've seen your photos. Hello, girlfriend.
Oh, everyone's seen my photos.
Yeah, hello.
It's so good to be back on the Super Podcast again. I really have missed this.
And you have been missed. The Super Podcast is all over the place right now, but we're going to be in a nice schedule and rhythm and have lots of cool people coming off and on the show. All sorts of craziness, but it is Super Podcast. It wouldn't be right without a bit of craziness.
It's going to be super, super awesome.
Yes, it will. I was about to do a Harley Quinn and I just totally just lost it in my head.
Oh, Harley Quinn.
There you go. You can do it. Why can't suddenly I've gone blank? I normally do the impression really well. I just can't think of something to say. Anyway, speaking of Harley Quinns and Poison Ivies, even though they're not really in what we're talking about, they're still part of the same universe. Yeah, completely. What has brought us here today is the brand new release of the DC animated adaptation of the 1988 graphic novel Batman The Killing Joke, which was written by Alan Moore. Boom, boom, boom. And of course his name is nowhere to be seen because he doesn't want his name associated with any adaptations of what he does.
That's just how the man is, for better or worse.
Yep. That crazy, crazy genius of a man.
And his beard.
Yes, and his crazy beard and hair and everything.
Okay, so how is this podcast going to flow, Marcy? Like, what do you have in mind?
All right. We're just going to talk about it. We both saw this as of the recording of this. We saw it yesterday at the once-off screenings that happened all around the country. And we'll just get right to it. The basic plot for the film, I'm just reading it off IMDb because that's how I roll. As Batman hunts for the escaped Joker, the clown prince of crime attacks the Gordon family to prove a diabolical point mirroring his own fall into madness. Now, I think it's safe to say there will be spoilers.
Because lots and lots of spoilers.
There is no way to actually really discuss this without spoilers because there is a lot to discuss. There will be spoilers even if you've read it because the film actually adds in a lot of stuff. But first off, I want to address what they did with the screenings. They had a featurette before and after the film, which I thought was really good. I really enjoyed them both. I assume you got that as well.
No. All that happened is that we went in and we just saw the movie as it was. So, unfortunately, I didn't get the same sort of experience you did.
Well, that sucks.
No.
Before the movie, they just said there was a featurette afterwards. I didn't know about the one that was happening before it. It was mostly Mark Hamill talking about being the Joker and this return to the Joker and how he's gone about playing the character through from the animated series to the games and then to this. It was a clever little opening. I don't know how long it went for, maybe 10 minutes ish. But it's Mark Hamill. Of course you want to listen to Mark Hamill.
That's pretty fucking awesome. Damn it. I feel so cheated.
You should feel cheated because it was really cool. And then at the end, I think it was more a focus on the music, of the film and the musical number in there as well. So that was pretty good as well. But I definitely preferred the Mark Hamill thing because it was pretty cool. It would have been really cool to have something with Kevin Conroy about playing Bruce Wayne / Batman. But they didn't. I'm not sure what the features, the special features will be on the Blu-ray DVD release, but I'll just wait and see.
And speaking of which, the Blu-ray release isn't too far away, is it? It's on the 28th, if I'm not mistaken, right?
I believe it is the same day as Suicide Squad.
Ah, wow.
So next
Thursday. Yeah, that's not very far away at all.
Next Thursday. So, huh? Or Monday, whatever. Chris is whispering at me. He's not allowed to talk about the Killing Joke. You'll be able to read his written word on the website. So out next week. It's a very DC-centric few weeks, I would say, with the release of this and Suicide Squad.
Indeed, as well as the trailers from the San Diego Comic-Con. Goodness gracious me.
Yeah, absolutely a lot. We can discuss a little bit more of that after our review of The Killing Joke, because after our review of The Killing Joke, we'll have a few other little bits and bobs just to round out this mini bonus little episode. But we'll get right to it. So The Killing Joke, I guess you could say maybe just over half, was a pretty straight adaptation of the graphic novel. But the first part is pretty much all about Barbara Gordon / Batgirl, voiced by the beautiful and amazing Tara Strong. I didn't know about any of this because I didn't read about what they had added in or what was going to be there. I stayed clear of pretty much everything, so I went in without knowing. And I think you hinted to me you knew what they'd added in.
Yes, I should say right off the bat, unfortunately, this aspect of the movie was spoiled for me. But I didn't allow that to necessarily impact on the way I decided to view the film. But yes, when Marcy should have, when I was speaking to Marcy about it, this was before she saw it. So, I was basically giving a very, very vague and general sort of rundown of the movie. And I said, well, this is this whole aspect involving Barbara Gordon. And, Marcy kind of inquired about it. I was like, no, I'm not going to tell you. This is something that you need to see for yourself. And that's exactly what I did, because I don't make a habit of spoiling people.
No.
Do unto others, that sort of stuff. Indeed, that the first part of The Killing Joke is pretty much all new. It was, if I'm not mistaken, it was written, or rather conceptualized by Paul Dini. Bruce Timm. Bruce Timm, one of the duo of the Batman animated series. So, yes, I was very intrigued to see as to how they would have included Batgirl into the story, because as we well know with The Killing Joke, she's more or less regulated to be a plot device rather than an individual sort of character. That's something we'll discuss a little bit further down the track.
Yeah, she's really not in the graphic novel much. The one shocking thing that happens to her, which then later became canon for the comics. See, I kind of, as it started, I'm like, oh, okay, so they're going to add in some Batgirl stuff. But I thought maybe then it would be incorporated into the main story. But it's actually not. The whole thing is just like this whole new thing that they did, almost a prologue to what was to come. And I wasn't really sure with what direction they were going to go. I was pretty much on board with it because I thought, like, there's this interesting development. They've kind of showing how Batgirl and Batman are working together, what their working relationship is like, and what her life is like. I can hear you doing pages. You can do that somewhere else. Thank you. Sorry, all of it gets left in the show because I don't edit.
Wow.
Yeah.
Marcy, God damn.
Yeah. Well, if Chris is like making noise, no, you go do that in the other room. So yeah, I thought this is interesting. I kind of like this. It's going to make what happens to her so much more tragic, and how, you know, Batman's going to feel and how, you know, her father will feel. But then they kind of went in this direction that I really didn't agree with. I still don't agree with. It's really the one thing I really didn't like. And I know there's been things that have been hinted about with this, and I think Batman Beyond actually referenced a relationship between two characters. But I didn't feel like that was their relationship at all. And then it just kind of happens and I'm like, no. And I get, as I said, spoilers. The thing that happens is, the Batgirl kisses Batman. He kisses her back, and then they have sex. We don't really see the sex. We just see the beginning of what's gonna happen, and they have sex on the rooftop. And then Batman becomes very distant with her.
And she starts to act like a very bitter, jilted ex-lover.
Pretty much, yeah. So I was liking it up until then because I didn't really feel like there was a hint of anything. I didn't feel like she was trying to be sexy for him or anything like that at all, which I've seen in a few reviews and I'm like, no. That wasn't in there at all. And when that scene actually happened, everyone in the cinema, I think, just kind of laughed really uncomfortably because it's just like, we don't really want to see that.
Needless to say, I fully agree with what Marcy here has been saying. When I think of Batgirl and Batman, I think of a teacher and mentor, or not, sorry, student and mentor relationship, because Batgirl is like, you know, one of his finest students, and he has a duty of care over every one of his, over every one of his little baby chickens, so to speak. So when, you know, they sort of show that development and sort of like shoehorn it into the plot, let's keep in mind, like, when Barbara Gordon is shot, it is horrible. It is it gives Batman that additional motivation as if he didn't have it already. So when this whole sort of shoehorned sexual relationship is just forced down your throat, you're thinking there's no sort of real function for this. I guess I can sort of say, you know, at least they tried something a little bit different, but they didn't. There was no cause for it.
There was no reason for it to be there because you've already seen that relationship that they have and how he does want to protect her from, you know, getting herself into too much trouble, as we see with, I think his name was Paris, a baddie that they deal with at the beginning or the first part of this movie. But I didn't think it was at all necessary, and it kind of did take me out of it a little bit. And
it felt very forced.
Yeah, it was so not necessary, especially considering Batgirl kind of hooks up with, well, she's known for her relationship with Nightwing.
And then there's Tim Drake, who's like the third Robin.
But it's also like, you know, you kind of see, especially like with how this is done in the movie, you feel like next to Alfred that Commissioner Gordon would be Batman's like closest friend in a way. I don't think he would go bang his daughter. I mean, it's bad enough he's got her crime fighting and whatnot. But it really didn't sit well. I hated that scene. I liked everything else up until that point. I guess the way they kind of reacted, because maybe it felt wrong for him, it kind of felt a bit weird for her, seemed only natural. And I think as they went on in doing what they were doing, I think it clouded their judgments, which would only make sense. And then but I don't think it was needed for her to be like, no, I think I've got to step away. Because I think she would have been heading down that road anyway.
Well, I'm assuming by this point she's been Batgirl for a while, okay? So she's obviously no stranger to discipline and remaining professional. And she knows by this point Bruce rather well. You know, maybe she could have had like a very sort of innocent schoolgirl crush on him or something, because let's face it, who wouldn't? But yeah, as time's gone on, she's got to know Bruce very, very well. And she knows what sort of man he is. And also, she's the one who initiates the sexual encounter. Okay, there's no sort of sense of, non-consensuality between them. But it's just, once again, there's no chemistry there. There's no sort of lead up to it. I never got a sense of romance between them. And some people out there are saying, you know, don't be so butthurt about it. Well, here's the thing. Batgirl, that's not how Batgirl acts. She's not rash. She's not hot-blooded. She's not impulsive. She's a very smart and well-put-together young lady. And, you know, you have to be in order to be a crime fighter, just, you know, like Batman. So with this whole thing just coming completely left out of field, it's no wonder why the audience you saw the movie with were, like, you know, laughing uncomfortably, because, you know, it's not something that we, quite frankly, we really cared for.
Yeah, and I think there wasn't really that romantic chemistry. I thought maybe, like, her kissing him is almost a sign of she's almost confused about everything, but I would have expected that he wouldn't have done it back and he would have pushed her off, and that's not what happened, so...
Exactly. Like, if Barbara Gordon ever really did that to Batman, like, he'd shut that shit down.
Yeah.
He would.
Yeah,
it's kind of an insult to both characters once you think about it. Now, granted, I'm not a know-it-all fan about Batman, but, you know, Batman's a very stoic character. You know, he isn't one to rapidly give in to his passions, and he's been doing this Batman shtick for a whole long time. So this little encounter on the rooftop, I'm sorry, I really do not buy.
Yeah, but, you know, aside from that, I thought there was a really good thing with her... with how we see her as Barbara and how we see her as Batgirl. I didn't think she was reduced to just a plot device. I thought she was an actual character. And I think what happens to her, ultimately, it's going to affect the audience a lot more, because we've gotten to know her more throughout the movie. But then you can really see how much it can really break both... her father and Batman. But once the film heads into the graphic novel stuff, I mean, that was pretty much on point, note for note. It was pretty much a straight and well done adaptation.
Yeah, it was pretty much one of the most faithful adaptations of a graphic novel I think I've seen. Now, the Killing Joke has been rather problematic, and it's been critiqued and re-critiqued as time has gone on. But I think even if you didn't necessarily, or rather, if you subtracted the character of Batman and just, like, you know, replaced him with another sort of similar sort of character, if you replaced the other characters with just a mental sort of state, you know, it is very much a story about psychology. And what it would take for somebody to sort of, you know, finally reach their breaking point and snap. Yeah. It also reminded me later on, of course, with The Dark Knight, with how the Joker particularly sort of focused his attention on Harvey Dent. It's the same thing with Commissioner Gordon. Like, Gordon is the exemplar of morality, you know, compared to Batman. So Joker was taking a cold and calculating attack at perhaps, like, the White Knight figure.
Yeah, and, absolutely.
And that's what really sort of keys in the story for me. Not necessarily just the characters, as much as I do love them, but that the themes and the idea behind it. It's something I feel we can relate to on some deep, dark, forbidden level.
Yeah, and I think, as it's always been, this is sort of the origin you can imagine the Joker would have had. And
it's true.
And I really like how in both, like, the graphic novel and the film, and just, Mark Hamill's voice work, like, just so quiet
that
and sensitive.
That's the best I've heard from him as the Joker, far none.
But just him, like, as before the Joker, like, that calm and quiet sort of pathetic guy, and then just how maniacal he becomes. I mean, it's so good. But I really like how we see how that character kind of gets almost destroyed. And it's almost, it's so sadly just, it's sad. It's really sad. Like, that could really break anyone. And I think he's just a guy that just was really pushed. And I think it really works in this way as an origin. Like, you still don't really know all that much about him, but you can kind of understand how he's gotten to that point, I think.
Yeah, from the perspective of, you know, the notion of if he's telling the truth.
Well, yeah.
It, once again, it's like what the Wikipedia said that you read out earlier. It's like, this is kind of a mirror of what Commissioner Gordon goes through, not necessarily the same circumstances, but going through that state of mind. Mm. Because, you know, before he assumed the mantle of the Joker, as you said, he's just a very sort of, you know, shy, timid fella. And he's trying to keep his wife from going out into the streets and that sort of stuff. So, you know, he really does sort of pull a 180 when he just completely loses it, like when he just gives in to the madness and realizes just how cruelly absurd the world truly is.
Yeah,
it's a great performance. Like, this film has fantastic voice cast. Let's just get that out of the way right now.
Top-notch voice cast. Top-notch. I mean, I don't think you could have done this without having Hamill and Conroy return to those roles, no doubt.
Oh, definitely not. And that's no slight against the other actors who have portrayed Batman and Joker in the past. But, geez, even now, like, you know, 20 or so years on from Batman the Animated Series, when I think of Batman and the Joker, voice-wise, I think of Conroy and Hamill.
Mm.
I don't think of anybody else. Oh, hello, I'm here.
She's back. absolutely, I think you think of those two guys with those roles.
So what exactly did you really like about the movie, Marcy? Like, other than what we've already discussed, is there something that really sort of speaks to you?
Look, I think with the way they, just the whole thing, I just think, as you said, it's so psychological, and I think it really makes that very clear. But I think it also does, like with the book as well, it really makes you think, like, what the hell would have to happen in my life that is going to make me snap and become someone like the Joker? And he really, like, does everything he possibly can to Gordon. He shoots his daughter. He strips her while she's shot. He takes those disgusting photos. There's always the implication that maybe he sexually assaulted her, but I just don't see that he did.
Neither do I. Like, I think with the Joker, he's kind of asexual. At least in this story, he doesn't have any sort of sense of a desire or sexuality about him.
I know they hint at it with, like, the prostitutes, but is it necessary, like, that he's doing those things with them or something else completely? We don't know.
Yeah, like, for all we know, he could be, you know, jerking off in front of these prostitutes and they're being forced to watch him.
Yeah, well, pretty much anything. But I just don't think he would have... I think the humiliation of her to her father is what he wanted to do. And, again, he strips Gordon completely naked and just takes him on this, like, ride of complete psychological torture, and by the end he is such a broken man, but when he says to Batman, you've got to take him alive, you cannot, you got to do it by the book, you realize he's not completely broken. Which I think is a great moment in both.
Because despite all of what's happened to him as well as Barbara, you know, Gordon still has it in himself to sort of like stay on the path. And that's what sort of, you know, arguably, that's what makes him stronger than perhaps Batman. You know, Batman says, as long as he's known the Joker, he's always felt tempted at least to kill him.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. But with Gordon, he has a far more straight-laced approach to it. And as you said, as broken as he was, he's not completely broken.
And it's at that moment, you know, the Joker really hasn't won.
No, not yet.
at least with Gordon. But I love how the ending is just so insane. That you just, you don't know. And the film, I think the way they did it was perfect. I love how it just kind of faded and then you can still hear the laughing of that ridiculous joke. But the way I see it, at least with the way in the film, I think they both had reached a different kind of breaking point. And I think it's the breaking point of this thing they have between each other. And I actually don't think Batman killed him. I think he would have taken him in. But I just think it's almost like that's it. It's done.
I think, you know, given the Killing Joke was a one-off sort of thing, you know, for all intents and purposes, let's just say.
Well, yeah.
He could have killed the Joker. He could have, like, actually just throttled him. But, you know, this is still Batman. Batman still, at this point at least, you know, sort of goes by those rules of his, or rather that one true rule. You know, maybe he knocked the Joker out or something, choked him out, I don't know. But probably not necessarily killed him, but, you know, made him wish he was dead. But, yeah, it's a very ambiguous ending if you just take into account the one-off nature of the story.
Yeah. But, I mean, of course you're going to think about, like, what would have happened, but I just think that joke with them laughing and sharing that laugh, it's just that they're so broken by everything that that's all you can do is laugh.
And yeah, at the end, like, their laughter actually sort of combined to become this one scary laugh.
But I imagine that Batman would have listened to Gordon. I really don't think he would have had it in him to kill him, but that's my thought anyway.
Well, probably not in front of Gordon.
You know, maybe he could have just left him to die, just not necessarily like caused his death. But you know, it is what it is. And I just thought that was, you know, that whole thing, with the straight adaptation, I thought was just spot on. And for the most part, I liked the added stuff, except for obviously what we discussed. And yeah, no, everyone I think voice-wise was fantastic. And Tara Strong just so good as Batgirl.
She always is.
She's a wonderful, wonderful person. Loved Ray Wise's Gordon.
Oh, yes.
Really, really just a cool choice. Always cool for John DiMaggio to do something, so.
And what's really funny is John DiMaggio voiced the Joker in Under the Red Hood. So two Jokers for the price of one.
Yeah. and of course, we do get a Red Hood in the origin, which is always pretty cool, too. But no, just top-notch everything. The animation was beautiful. The music was just phenomenal. I think they just really outdid themselves with that.
They did. It was a very well-made film. A lot of thought and attention was put into making it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I would be lying if I said that the visuals were horrible and the sound was
well, yeah.
terrible. I'd be lying, and very, very badly.
Yeah.
So, The Killing Joke is definitely one of the far superior offerings of the DC animated universe, for sure.
Oh, it absolutely is. I just wish that moment could just be changed, and then... But what would your rating out of 5 be?
I would give it a 4 out of 5. I only deduct 1 star because of that.
Yeah, mine would be...
I have to add here, like, didn't you think that Batgirl's suit came off really, really
a little bit too
fast?
Easily, yeah. mine would be 4.5 out of 5 after really sitting on it and taking everything in. It loses that half point just for that little bit. But other than that, I just thought it was really, really just something else and really gives you a lot to think about. I can understand, like, why it's very divisive between people. But I think you've got to really delve into it a lot more, like we have, and thought about it without just saying that was crap, without, you know, really giving any reason to it.
If you're going to say something is crap, be prepared to back it up.
Yeah, pretty much. So with that review done, I will call in Christopher, who is our resident Joker. He has the green hair. See?
You're really loud.
Shut up. He's too loud. You're way too loud.
Oh, Marcy, you're just being ridiculous there. Sorry.
Oh, Mr. J. Oh, God, that was terrible. Anyway. Yes. So, Christopher.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Yes. I don't know how hard it was to hold back just now.
Well, you're not allowed, so...
I know.
All right. So, before we kick off with some more speedy reviews, let's touch on the SDCC trailers for DC.
Yes.
I'll let you lead the way.
Thank you. It was... my absolute great joy to wake up yesterday morning to basically find my entire news feed, particularly from Instagram, was just filled with all this DC comics related updates from San Diego. And as I went to my usual database for a lot of movie info, which is Dark Horizons, I noticed there were 4 big updates. One was a new trailer, Suicide Squad, the Wonder Woman trailer, and the first image and the first trailer for Justice League, as well as the announcement of the next 3 DC animated films.
What are the next 3 DC animated films, Christopher?
Just off the top of my head, we have a Batman and Harley, mm-hmm. which I'm secretly hoping has the hinted at from Bad Blood, Batgirl of Burnside. Because I love that Batgirl so much.
Yeah, no, she's on your leg.
She's on my leg. there is the Judas Contract, which is a Deadpool-focused... Deathstroke. Damn it, Wade Wilson. Deathstroke-related story. And the third one, I actually can't remember off the top of my head.
Can't remember.
Dark Justice League. Yeah. Sorry. So we get to see one of my favourite DC girls, Zatanna. On screen.
Mm-hmm.
This was awesome. But, oh my God, these trailers were just phenomenal. The Justice League one was a nice little...
It's pretty much just a few scenes.
It's a few scenes.
It's being shot. People can say they can be disappointed all they want or is underwhelming.
Yeah.
They're filming the fucking thing. They didn't need to give us anything.
They've been filming for 2 months, and this was just a nice special little treat for everyone because the Justice League was there for the first time in a big gathering like this.
Mm.
So it was a nice little thing, and Zach... I mean, you could tell how dazed and confused Zach was out there because he basically literally said when he took the stage... Yeah, we were, like, shooting the film, like, yesterday, and we're here, and we're going back to shoot it tomorrow. So, it was really cool to see that. It was a fun little trailer. It's got some funness.
I love what we're seeing of The Flash.
Oh, my God. Ezra Miller. Flash was just adorkable.
He's going to be so cool.
I I need friends. And I'm like, that's my much God, you. That's me.
Yeah, that would be you.
Yeah.
You're Ezra Miller's Barry Allen.
Yeah.
B, what did you think of what we saw from the Justice League?
I thought the fish.
Wait, what did you say?
The Justice League trailer. Well, look, I'm not going to say it's this or that. It's a preview for crying out loud, and it's not necessarily going to be the final product. But I do appreciate the sense of humour that's in the trailer. And, well, look, if you have ever said anything cross about Aquaman, now that he's played by Jason Momoa, I would love to see you say that to his face.
Yeah, that man is terrifyingly sexy.
Oh my God, he's sexy in person, he's sexy on screen.
Mm.
Oh yeah.
Also, I figure, you know, if you are a neighbour of Cthulhu, and if your dominion, you know, covers most of the planet, you know, nobody should be fucking with you in the first place.
Right? Everyone's going to, Aquaman, I predict, everyone's just going to love him. Arthur Curry. It's going to be well-loved.
I hear you talk to fish. Yeah. There we go. I must be out the coast. I'm talking. But, yeah, I mean, the Suicide Squad one was just another little fun trailer. I still don't... A lot of people still say, oh, it's giving stuff away, and it's... I think they're looking too deep into it because it still feels just like, even me, we can usually plot together an idea of where a trailer is taking us in terms of where it's going to be in the film. I just see this and I'm just like, I have no idea where these things are going to be placed in it, but it is going to be awesome. But the crowning jewel of anything that was at SDC this year, I think it's definitely that Wonder Woman trailer. It was just phenomenal. It looks phenomenal. Epic.
Phenomenon.
That's how we say it in the bush. it looks epic. It looks amazing. I'm really, really glad. And I don't think I've actually even said this in general. But I'm very, very proud and pleased that it is based in around World War One rather than the usual World War Two setting for a lot of Wonder Woman backstories, because World War One's in that time period is something we don't get a lot on big screens.
No.
Or in anything in general, because
it's going to separate itself from Marvel and Captain America in the way that it's
but that was a time when the world really changed.
Mm.
It was a time when hundreds of years of tradition and all of this just was demolished because, you know, I mean, at that time, the British Empire was like, yeah, our plan of attack is still to go marching up a hill in red coats. And it's like, the you know, whereas Germany at the time is like, we're using machine guns and we're going to trench warfare you and we're going to, you know, they came that close to winning it, basically.
It's not a World War One podcast. We're talking about
no, but I'm just saying that time in history is just so fascinating for her to come into the world of man at that time when man's history changing so dramatically.
If Chris Pine showed up on my beach, I'd go back with him too.
Yeah. I just love that bit at the end, though, when she's talking to Edie Candy and she's like, she's describing what a secretary is and the way she says that her line is just, well, where I come from, we call that slavery. And just the way she says it was such...
She is going to be great. She's, I think, she wonderful. Was such a standout in BVS. Such a perfect choice.
She's a delight.
I think it's looking pretty damn cool. B, chime in, please.
Hmm?
Wonder Woman trailer. Chime in.
oh, sorry. Look. Colors. Oh, my goodness. Wonder Woman just looks so vibrant and colorful and so much fun. I've only seen Monster, which was directed by Patty Jenkins, but that left a pretty good impression on me that this director is very, very capable, especially when it comes to telling stories about women. So Even though I still yet to be completely sold on Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman, because let's face it, we didn't really see her that much in Batman vs. Superman to really make a fist in the face sort of impression. But I do hope that she will rock it in this movie, because this is the first cinematic Wonder Woman adaptation, like solo film, that we have ever got. So a lot is riding on this film. So I really do hope that it performs well and Gal Gadot, you know, proves that she can't just walk the walk, but she can talk the talk and everything and swing the sword and all that stuff. I hope this movie succeeds. I really, really do. But in terms of visual, it's very, very promising just based on the aesthetics. That's for damn sure.
Definitely a lot to be excited about with JC.
It's basically next year is basically repeating what this year is for me. It's a DC fan fest. I mean, at the moment, I kind of had this moment yesterday where I was like, well, fuck Rogue One, and I'm super excited about that, but it's like, I don't care about that anymore, and it's like, who cares about Episode 8 when I've got this glory to behold?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I still love Star Wars.
You should still damn well love Star Wars.
I do. It's just, it's like, this is DC's
me. So. All right. Anyway. Now, for our final segment, we are going to do some lightning round reviews of the three other DC animated films that are recent with Batman. So, Chris, what was the first one?
The first one was you just want me to go one at a time?
Yeah, from in order that they came out.
So the first one...
of course there's spoilers, just saying.
Yeah. The first one was Son of Batman, which is based on Grant Morrison's Batman and Son from 2005, the graphic novel. And that basically introduced a new Robin, but it wasn't just any old Robin. It was Batman's very own son that he had with an affair with Talia al Ghul. And this boy turned out to be named Damian. It's taken from an idea that was hinted at in a comic story arc, from the 70s. So the fact that they went back, took that idea, and made it a reality was pretty damn awesome. The film is a loose adaptation of the graphic novel, but it is pretty damn impressive. The opening assault on Ra's al Ghul's fortress is amazing. And Damian, with the exception of Dick Grayson, is probably one of the finest Robins. And it took me a very long while to get to like Damien when I discovered his existence, because it's just the idea of Batman having a son, because in my mind, in my own Batman story I try to write, I always envisioned him having a daughter. But Damien's just a whole new kettle of fish, because unlike, you know, Dick and Tim and Jason, he's dangerous, because since birth he's been trained to be a warrior, to lead the League of Assassins, and he's basically a killer. He's from age 4, he climbed mountains, and he's just willing to pick up a sword.
There's a lot of anger in Damien. Not that I didn't get to see this, but I just see the other two. And from knowing and reading other things that have Damien, that's the kind of character that he is.
And I mean, he's. Because to be honest, Jason Todd and Tim Drake, they were never real Robins, I think, to a lot of people. Not only that, but they just never succeeded, because with their stories, it was the same old thing. It's like, oh yeah, I'm an orphan. Bruce Wayne's adopted me. So they were just really copying the Dick Drake Grayson story. Whereas Damien kind of reflects a lot of what happened with Dick, with his training and trying to overcome his fears, as well as Bruce's own history as well. But the only difference is, as I've said, is Damien was trained, he was born to be a killer, whereas Batman isn't. He became a vigilante for a horrible, horrible event. And that's why Damien is a very interesting character to look at, not as his son, but as a mentor, as a student as well.
Mm.
And that makes it different, because he is his son. But he doesn't treat him that way. The film, so which is really cool.
B, did you see this one?
Yes, Indeed, I did. And yeah, it's really fascinating how Damian Wayne has fit into this massive jigsaw puzzle that is the Bat family. When it comes to favorite Robins, like, I have a huge soft spot for Dick Grayson, because if Jason Todd was one of Batman's greatest failures, Dick Grayson was one of his greatest successes. Mm. But in saying that, the moment that sort of Jason Todd really became his own was when he became the Red Hood. He never really fit into the mold of Robin, because he was just so fiery tempered, and even though he was more than competent as a crime fighter and maybe as a detective, he was really, really angry. And even Batman could not temper that rage that was, you know, flaming inside of him. So when he became the Red Hood, he started to sort of assume his own identity while still at the same time abiding by some of what Bruce, you know, taught him. But yeah, Damian Wayne is a very interesting case. And you know what's more dangerous than a stranger? It's your family. And that's what Damian Wayne is. He's just an unknown sort of entity. And even though Batman is his father, and he may take out after him in a couple of ways, he is still very much Talia's child. And by extension, the child of the League of Assassins. And just to see that very powerful dynamic between father and son sort of come off the page and onto the screen, it's a very fascinating dynamic between them, that's for sure.
Mm.
Ratings, you two?
I'd give this one a 4.
4? B?
I'd give it about 3.5.
All right, next one.
Next one, and to be honest, this is the best of the three of this, in a way, trilogy, and that is Batman v. Robin.
And, oh my God, this is, like, my favourite of the animated movies I've seen for a very long time.
Yeah, to be honest,
loved this one. I'm allowed to talk, I've seen it.
Okay.
You're looking at me like I'm not allowed
to
talk.
No,
it was so good.
I don't know who's going first. Because
you tell the description.
Okay. Batman v. Robin is actually, again, another adaptation of a more recent comic with the New 52, which is Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo's Court of the Owls, which was with the New 52 in 2011. And again, it's a loose adaptation, but it is not as loose as, say, with Son of Batman.
It's not as loose as some vaginas down at the whorehouse. I know, I was making a bad joke.
Okay.
Just leave me alone. That was terrible.
So, I mean, this one's a little bit more faithful to the comic in feel and vibe. So the fact that you're sitting there and it's like, oh, they're quoting this, oh, this was in the comic. And The Court of Owls was, and probably is, the most original villain in the Batman universe that has been around since, I think, to be honest, the introduction of Bane back during the Nightfall incident in the early 90s. And for those that don't know, the Court of Owls is a secret society that has lived within Gotham for hundreds of years. They've basically been there since the city was founded. They do have a very close relationship with the Wayne history, particularly Bruce's mother, as well as one of his great-grandfathers. But there's this a nursery rhyme that basically, and if you give me one moment, I will go find it.
He's going to go find the nursery rhyme. While he does that, I'll just say, this movie is so awesome, and, like, Jeremy Sisto, oh my God.
He was the main talent.
Oh my God, so good. But just the dynamics and relationships they put in it, just so good. Oh my God. What's his name? The guy that voiced Batman. Can't remember his name, but he was really good.
Jason O'Mara.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good choice as Batman.
And Batman and freaking Dick Grayson in this are so handsome. Handsome freaking bloody animated characters. All right.
So, and this is what I love about the not only the comic but this film as well. I mean, the film didn't explore it too much, but the comic creates this, and this is why the Court of Owls is so fucking brilliant. They create this beautiful mythos of this almost, you know, could it be real? It's just a myth, because a young Bruce Wayne actually went out to find them when his parents died because he thought they had something to do with it. They didn't, really. They had something to do with another incident that happens, and I do suggest you all go read this comic. It's the first two volumes of the New 52 Batman. But I love this nursery rhyme. It goes, "Beware the Court of Owls that watches all the time, ruling Gotham from a shadowed perch behind granite and lime. They watch you at your hearth, they watch you in your bed. Speak not a whisper word of them, or they'll send the Talon for your head." It's just, and it's really cool, the dynamic that they give with Robin, because the Talon character, or the lead Talon, which is played by Jeremy's sister, is trying to tempt Damien into, you know, to his darker instincts, because that's what happened to him with his own mentor, had trained him in that way. And he can see a lot of him in Damien. So Damien's kind of torn between the life that he knows as well as the new life with his father. And, it's just so brilliant. And there was a moment I geeked out so bad towards the end when the Dark Knight puts on this mega bat suit and the Talons are attacking the cave because they find their way in there. Again, this is straight from the comic. And he gets in the suit, he opens the door and he says, "I'm going to tell you bastards this once. Get the hell out of my cave." And it's just like, it was phenomenal. It was one of the best adaptations of one of their comics in the animated since.
But just as a film on its own, it's phenomenal. Oh my God, it's probably my favourite of the films. B, your thoughts on this one? Mm-hmm.
Oh, can I just say, Jeremy Sisto has one of the best voices I've ever heard.
Jeremy Sisto is an amazing man that I would so just, anyway.
He has a very sort of seductive quality about him as Talon, and you can understand as to why Damien would just be sort of so enamoured with what Talon is offering him. It's like the devil. Talon is Damien's devil. And I have to say, if Talon spoke to me in such a way as that and sort of just laid it on the table and just like, if, you know, I'm not sure if I would be able to really sort of, you know, have the willpower to resist him, because he really does appeal to that darker side of Damien that was fully nurtured in the League of Assassins. All it could have taken was like one little push. That's all that would have taken for Damien to just completely cross into the Court of Owls. And I do agree, it is one of the best DC animated films that I have seen in quite some time. And that's saying something.
Yeah.
I think a lot of quality. It gets 5 out of 5 for me.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's so much quality with most of DC's animated things.
They're spectacular. I mean, the Kickstarter was The Mask of the Phantasm, which I haven't actually seen in almost 20 years, but I need to remedy that.
But, yeah, 5 from you too, Chris?
Oh, 5. I mean, it's one of my top 5 Batman films, along with The Dark Knight Returns, Mask of the Phantasm, and The Killing Joke. It was just, oh.
And the final one to discuss is it Batman Bad Blood?
Batman Bad Blood.
With Batwoman.
Batwoman is in this one. Bad Blood came out earlier this year, and it's not really based on anything. It's more based on ideas and themes that was in the New 52. So when you watch it, and if you're familiar with more Batman-related New 52 events, you sit there and you could be like, oh, yeah, this is kind of like that, and that's kind of like that, and that's referencing this, and oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. But the villains, they're not necessarily very memorable, or like Mad Hatter's in there, and they're not villains that you're like, oh, okay, I care enough about that guy to be. I mean, it's revealed that Talia's behind the whole thing, and that's like, oh, yeah, cool, Talia. I get to see more of her and her cleavage. But it was fairly weak. I mean, the addition of Batwoman was really cool.
She was, I'm going to just put it out there, I think she was the most interesting.
She was, yeah.
And the best part about it. I'm actually down with Yvonne Stravosky, or if you say her name, as the voice. So I thought she did a really great job.
But, I mean, again, this is probably, I think, the first time Batwoman has been in a film like this.
I think it might be, B. Yeah. You may know, I mean, I know you're a big fan of Batwoman, so maybe you know a little bit more.
Oh, I wouldn't necessarily say I'm a huge fan of Batwoman, but I think this is the first occasion in which I've seen Batwoman in a DC animated film who's had a substantial enough role.
Yeah.
And just for that, I give the movie points because I love the character of Batwoman. I think she's completely singular in who she is.
Mm.
So it was wonderful to see her in this movie. It's just too bad that the rest of it didn't necessarily support the promise that you would have gleaned from it. But I didn't hate it. It just could have been better.
It could have been better.
Could have been a lot better.
Actually really liked how they handled her sexuality. It's not like, oh my God, look, it's a lesbian. It's just like a matter-of-fact sort of thing. Yeah. Like,
see, when
you know,
when a character's sexuality like that, and I think, because I've never seen this series, it's called Janet King, it's an Australian one, but I got described to it by my directing mentor who was in that, or one of them. He said something about, and it was in addressing the fact that, you know, having a gay character in something, you don't need to necessarily, particularly a mainstream thing, you don't need to particularly have them doing anything super sexual. All you need to see is really them next to someone, or maybe even just, you know, not doing anything super forceful, even just a simple kiss, you know, because to even suggest it, not say, this person's gay and they have to be gay and they have to act like this and they have to dress like this. And it's just like, well, because they're understanding that your main audience won't feel comfortable with this. And that's a feeling that I'm kind of getting. This is just a Transformer thing that's going on with one of the comic series at the moment. It's something that's like, well, you're kind of just throwing it in my face, and it is being a little, eh? So it's not like, you know, this person's gay, she's got to be like this. It's, look, this is who she is. It's a part of her life. We don't need to force it down your throat.
No, I'm just saying, so, the way they handle it's not throwing attention to it. No. It's just, she's into chicks, end of story.
That's what I'm saying. They didn't need to ram it down your throat by saying, let's have a
big lesbian sex scene for the hell of it.
Blue is the warmest color did. Which,
anyway, we're like, not talking about that. I rate this maybe 3 out of 5.
I'd give this a 3 as well.
B?
Yeah, give it a 3.
All right. So, yeah, that is a wrap for this bonus DC Spectacular bonus podcast for the week. So, yeah, cheers for both of you chiming in and for me for doing it too. You're welcome, Marcy. Fantastic.
No, I didn't say anything.
I was talking to myself. Hello.
Oh.
It's the voices in my head.
That's not what they really said.
anyway. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, B. Thank you, Marcy. You're welcome, Marcy. I did it again. So a bit of a DC-themed special episode that I'm just rambling on now.
DC rules.
Shut up.
Suck at everybody else.
Can you shut up, really? All right. So, if you want to find me, normally find me telling Chris off because he's always naughty. I don't mean that in a sexual way either. I mean he's naughty and he drives me nuts and I don't know how I put up with him. Fucking gonna end up in the loony bin. Just like Harley Quinn. Anyway.
Oh, you are the loony bin, Marty.
Oh, God, yeah. Anyway, I'm still rambling. So find us at www.supermarcy.com. You can like The Super Network on Facebook at facebook.com/TheSuperNetwork. You can follow my Twitter account at twitter.com/SuperMarcy. You can subscribe on iTunes to the Super Podcast. and all the audio goodness that we provide. You can just look up Super Marcy. It's probably the one that comes up more than actually looking up Super Podcast. I don't know why that is. And you can try add me on Facebook. I won't necessarily add you back. same with Instagram. B, where can people scope you out?
You can find me in your pants if you buy me a drink or several. You can also find me
Done deal, B.
You can find me on Facebook as B Harper, of course. On Twitter as Da Boomcat, that is DA_Boomcat with a BOOOMKAT. You can also find me just hanging around on the Super Network, making a complete ass of myself, and charmingly so. And Chris, where can we find you?
You probably won't find me much anywhere at the moment. You will find my Killing Joke review on the Super Network website this week. Next week, you will see my Suicide Squad, because I'm going to go see it next Monday before anybody else. But apart from that, you're probably not going to see much of me, because I'm going to be very busy.
He's going to be very busy at work, but I think your...
My
Twitter?
Twit face is... Gojira 2387. Not that I use it that much.
He doesn't use it much.
No, I just stalk celebrities. My Instagram is the same. And
that's about it.
That's it.
All right. So, thank you, one and all. Thank you for listening. Hope everybody's enjoyed this show. We will always be around. Until next time, don't go too crazy. See you later.
Thank you.